Welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Uprising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power and we shine a light ahead of us on the path to where evolution is leading. Now, the purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together, to address problems rather than merely defend positions. We have another purpose as well, and that is to provide a context at a time when content can be contradictory, confusing, and overwhelming. Well, today's conversation comes at a time when we've been inundated with fake news and real lies, and when we have a president who some feel is more honest because he boldly proclaims himself a liar. Well, we'll be talking with Brad Blanton today. He's the author of a world-changing and controversial book called Radical Honesty. Brad wrote this book nearly 25 years ago, and I wonder if he could have predicted that the leader of the so-called free world would be so freely practicing radical dishonesty. I'm sure he'll have plenty to say about that. Brad Blanton, PhD. He's a psychotherapist, author, workshop leader. He's a speaker and founder of Radical Honesty Enterprises. He describes himself as, I love this, white trash with a PhD. Well, I guess that's an honest expression of both braggadocio and humility. His first book, Radical Honesty, How to Transform Your Life by Telling the Truth, became a nationwide bestseller in 1996, been translated into 12 languages, and published all around the world. His second book, Practicing Radical Honesty, How to Complete the Past, Live in the Present, and Build a Future with a Little Help from Your Friends, is about the relationship between personal transformation and social transformation. We'll definitely talk about that today. He's also collaborated with Neil Donald Walsh, who is the author of Conversations with God, on a book called Honest to God, A Change of Heart That Can Change the World. He has another book, Radical Parenting, 7 Steps to a Functional Family in a Dysfunctional World, which is about child rearing, and Brad says it's the most radical book he's ever written. He has twice been an independent candidate for Congress from his rural home district in Virginia, running against Republican Eric Cantor, who later served as House Minority Whip. So lots to talk about today. Welcome, Brad.
Thank you. That's a very elaborate introduction. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I took the words right out of your mouth, so it's perfect. I think we first met, I'm guessing, at the book fair in L.A. in 1994, when we both had books that were distributed by Atrium Books. And our joke during those times was that we had a president, Bill Clinton, who practiced sporadical honesty. So
yeah, that's right.
So let's just talk about radical honesty. What can this book and meme offer us in these very strange times of blatant misinformation, disinformation, missing information, distorted information, with little kernels of truth outranked by general bullshit? Okay, so
yeah.
how do we go? How can we look at radical honesty in these times and in the 25 years since you've written it?
While you were talking about the current times and the way the president is, I should mention that the president has been very good for book sales for me. My book sales, both audio and paperback books, have doubled in the last 2 years. because of Donald Trump. Because people are in ongoing conversations all over the world about honesty. They're really coming our way. They're by radical honesty. Well, maybe this would do. But what's the problem with? It's impossible to be able to communicate with someone who doesn't know how to make the distinction between evidence and just assertion of opinion. And it's a big problem, of course, in couples and in families and in organizations and everything else, is that we've been talking for years about being able to honestly describe what you notice. And radical honesty is essentially that. It's reporting what you notice. And it's based on the idea that we can only notice, like, everything you can possibly notice can be easily divided into three parts. You can notice what's going on outside of you right now. You can notice what's going on within the confines of your own skin right now. And you can notice what's going through your mind right now. And that's all there is. There ain't no more. I call it inside, outside, upside down. The upside down is the mind is basically a very unreliable instrument, and that's been given great proof recently by damn near everything Trump says publicly, and even his allies are hard put to even just sit there and keep their mouth shut, much less not say, oh, no, I'm sorry, that's not the kind of bullshit I want put out there. I've got another kind.
That's right. Everybody has their own distinct kind. But this is how did we get to being this blatant about it? How have we evolved or devolved to this point where we actually have people who have, I would say, joined a cult and are willing to, you know, say up is down and down is up?
Yeah, I don't know. I wish I did. What I think is that it's more that people believe in belief. Then you believe that your mind's opinions are reality. You believe that a story is the truth. And the problem is a story is not the truth, and a thought is not an observation. And that thinking is quite different than noticing. And we need to get over confusing thinking with noticing, because it could bring about our complete demise unless we can make those distinctions, because we don't have any way except one opinion versus another opinion to make choices. I love this guy, Yuval Noah Harari. Have you read anything of his, like Sapiens? Yeah.
Yes,
Sapiens,
yes,
and
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just tickles me to death, because he says, how did humankind take over the world the last 70,000 years? We almost died off. It was about like 12,000 was the most we had once in Central and North Africa. And we didn't quite die off, but basically we ended up taking over the whole world and killing off the other human beings and most of the other species and all those other things. How did we do that? He said we did it because of one skill, which is we are all in large numbers able to believe in the same bullshit at the same time. it's like, okay, let's build a pyramid. Okay, 140,000 deaths and 200 years and they build a pyramid. Okay, we're over that. Let's build a cathedral. Oh, yeah, okay, let's build another cathedral. And they've been completely aligned and taking over the continents and capturing other people and going to war, because that seems to be what human beings are good at, and they've ended up taking over the world. And now they're ending up destroying the world with the same skill. So I like it, because he takes something that's very negative and says, this is our one true virtue.
And here we are. Now we're building casinos. Now we're building casinos. Yeah. That's the latest monument to God. Monument to God. How did radical honesty, how did this book come about? Going back to, what prompted you to write this book, and how did it come about?
Well, I was in undergraduate school at the University of Texas in psychology. When I was 19 years old, I got in the civil rights movement. And I basically went through undergraduate school and then through graduate school and just barely made it, because I got arrested a lot. And I had various academic authorities threaten me, and I dared them to follow through, and none of them did. So they finally gave me my doctorate when I was 25 just to get me out of there. So I'm what you call a borderline PhD. What I learned in there, I learned that basically what counts is your ability to report what you notice, and that you don't back down from reporting what you notice. And you say what you think, and you say, I don't know if I'm right or not, but this is what I think is right. And you do that. That's what I call radical honesty, because you are at risk of, like, having to change your belief or having to change your behavior. And it's okay, because there's a vulnerability to it that allows you to love other people and for them to love you. Is that kicking it out of gear that you're always building an image is the thing that is so, like, appalling about Trump. Is he's never working on anything but his image. It's like, it's what counts is what people think of Donald Trump. That's the only thing that counts in the world for him. And I don't believe he's had a correction for a long time.
He's kind of like the mirror, even though it's a distortion mirror, about what's mm-hmm. become important in our so-called civilization. So go ahead, continue. Yeah. So on to radical honesty. So how did all of this develop? You became a therapist?
Yeah, I was interested in cognition and creativity and psychotherapy. And so I did a postdoc for 2 years after I got my doctorate in Washington, D.C., and it was in 1968 and 69. And the whole world was, what the world was doing then was, like, basically it was in a gigantic uproar, as it still is. But basically radical honesty was what I started asking. I saw mostly lawyers in therapy. I was in practice for 35 years in Washington, D.C., and I learned from those lawyers that basically the primary source of most of their stress was their own mind, that they basically were attached to being right and not being wrong, to proving that they could win an argument and so forth. And that basically they would come to me and say, look, I've just got divorced the second time. I make $1 million a year in a law firm. I should be happy, but I'm miserable. And why am I miserable? I say, well, you're miserable because you don't have any relationship that's authentic. You and your wife are alienated and hate each other. You haven't seen your kids. You've been working 80 hours a week for 5 years. And basically you got promoted to partner, but now you have to still work 80 hours a week because partners have to do that to keep all the other slaves working. And so you have a miserable life. That's why you're depressed.
Well, that's simple.
Right.
There's no accident. You're depressed because your life is miserable.
Right.
You're not making that up.
Right. And so they said, well, all right. So I started coaching them to tell the truth. And what happened is they had some really hard going in the beginning because people are in conspiracies to maintain lies. That's what usually corporations are, is a conspiracy to maintain a lie. And what happens is the people that you're maintaining lie with get really mad when you start telling the truth and to stop supporting the lie. But after a short period of time, of only a month or two, these people were no longer depressed, and they had relationships of intimacy, and they were laughing and sharing some things, and they were having sympathy for other people rather than being preoccupied with themselves. And so we started developing what are the skills and the rules of radical honesty. And it became very simple. Report what you notice, right or wrong. And stick with the other person until you get beyond what happens. If they get hurt by what you say, stay with them until they get over being hurt. If they get angry, stay with them until they get over being angry. If you get angry, you stay with them until you get over it. And you get over it by being angry, staying angry as long as you feel angry in your body and notice it and report the symptoms and be present to the other person. And then when it recedes, report that it recedes. And what happens is you can have a furious argument at 8:30. And at 8:45, you put your arm around each other and go get a beer, and everything's fine. In fact, you're better friends than you were before you had the argument. And this proved out because I ran a lot of groups, and I had a lot of people in individual therapy, and I started doing workshops and I design the workshops around the general idea of radical honesty. And I've written about another 10 books since then. And all of them are pertinent to honesty as a way for transformation. Transformation means that hatred becomes love, that shame becomes pride, that anger becomes joyfulness. And things like that occur because of you not avoiding anything, but actually affirming and paying attention to and reporting the truth about what your experience is.
You know, and I remember, I think it was maybe 1995, it was shortly after we met, you came to Austin, Trudy and I, my wife Trudy and I were living in Texas at that time, and we spent a weekend at a Radical Honesty weekend. And one of the things I remember from that about being present, you talked about going to a Greek aisle that you went to all the time, and then you had to be careful that you weren't simply remembering your old experience, but you are being present for the new one. We're about to take a break. We'll talk more about this when we get back, but we're going to talk about difference, the relationship between honesty and presence, and then we'll talk a little bit about our collective honesty or lack of. Steve Behrman, I'm Wiki Politiki. We're talking with Brad Blanton, author of Radical Honesty. Back shortly.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
Hi, this is recording artist and composer Yuval Ron, inviting you to a voyage through the chakras, a new double album of guided meditations to transform your life, a sublime musical medicine for nourishing inner peace and reaching to your higher virtues. Get it now at metamindfulnessmusic.com, M-E-T-T-A, mindfulnessmusic.com.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor. Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
In the wake of a hurricane, your monetary donation can make a huge difference to those in need. To donate, visit supporthurricanerelief.org. That's supporthurricanerelief.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Okay, Steve Behrman, we're back with Brad Blanton, author of Radical Honesty. We were just starting to talk about the idea of presence, because you're talking about being an observer. Being an observer, you have to be present in the moment where you are rather than in some memory and some future rumination or past rumination. Say more about presence and honesty.
Presence is kind of like, it's simple and sensate. It has to do with what people find hardly worth mentioning being quite valuable, and what people think are quite valuable hardly worth mentioning. Like, people think insights are what you're after. When you're in therapy, when you're in a meeting, when you talk to somebody, you're looking for an insight. Well, insights are good, they're fun, they help if they're based on noticing. You know, there was this, for 300 years, there was an argument between existentialist philosophers and theologians, starting with Kierkegaard and coming all the way to Jean-Paul Sartre. And they said, basically, that are you a human being or a human doing? A human being is based in noticing and presence. And a human doing is based on accomplishing intentions that the mind creates. And so, finally, Jean-Paul Sartre said, you cannot separate your being and your doing. Well, that still didn't help. It's just we couldn't separate it. So finally, the greatest philosopher of the 20th century solved it for them. And his name was Frank Sinatra.
But he said,
dooby dooby doo, or maybe do a dooby too, dooby doo. Anyway, probably the combination of dooby dooby doo and do a dooby too, probably both work toward that.
Like
that. Yeah.
Yeah, we and I have to come up with an album now.
I guess, you know, actually, it could be called, since you're into radical honesty, the album could be called Can I Be Frank With You?
Yeah, very good.
Anyway, but go ahead. Go ahead with the doing and the being.
I revised it to be, do, be, do, be, because being has to come first. This is in response to your question.
Oh,
is
good.
That when you're noticing, you know, you mentioned the dilemma of, when you're noticing something, but it's the second time you've noticed it, are you sure you're noticing it, or is it just that it triggered a replay of your memory when you noticed it before? Mm-hmm. And how do you know? And what you have to do to know is to check what you are perceiving at the level of seeing and hearing and having sensations. It's like, I came up with after many years of running the Radical Honesty workshops, the 8-day special workshop, which is about basically trying to give people what happens in therapy in a year in 8 days. And what we came up with was a chant. We finally came up with a chant that leads to enlightenment without fail within 3 minutes. And I usually charge thousands of dollars for this, but I'm going to give it to you and all the people that are listening for free right now. And the chant that we came up with that always works to enlighten people within 3 minutes is this. Duh. Duh. And you just chant duh for 3 minutes. You just get dumber than a stick. And you just get just dumb as a box of hammers. And you're sitting there and you're just like, reach over and like touch to the person you're with, or just sort of snicker and smile and drool or something. That is where love comes from. That's where authentic contact occurs. It's not when you're spinning some theoretical physical answer to the problems of the universe. It's whenever you're saying, I don't know.
It's the Clem Cadiddle Hopper route to enlightenment.
Right. You're just diddling along, just like Clem Cadiddle Hopper. Yeah. And I do think that those are strikingly, I've fallen in love from stupidity. In fact, maybe stupidity is the very basis of love. I think dumbness is better than stupidity. Stupidity is like making things out of your dumbness, but regular dumbness is very dependable. When you really meditate and you really get there and you just sit there and you say, do a half an hour, and you're just blissed out. How you got there was not by going through brilliant machinations of the mind. You got there by just getting dumb and noticing, and just jumping around playing with the kids or slobbering like a dog or something like that. Those are more direct pathways to enlightenment than the intellectual and complicated ones that involve a whole lot of complex things to do in order to get there.
That's why they're called complexes, obviously. And, you know, one of my favorite brilliant comedic minds is Stephen Wright. And somebody asked him, you know, Stephen Wright, it's kind of like his comedy is all paradox. I bought a humidifier and a dehumidifier and figured I'd let him duke it out. I put a skylight in my dining room. Boy, are the upstairs neighbors upset. That sort of thing. And he was being interviewed, and how do you come up with your comedic material? He says, I've learned to think like a child. Which what you're talking about is pure observation without conclusion. So how does that relate to honesty? Because one more thing. Whenever somebody says to me or to anybody, can I be completely honest with you? You know that what's going to happen is there's going to be a slam or a slur. So
right.
How do we get
you
past that?
I think the way to get past it is with friends to let them know. If a woman says, do I look fat in this dress? I say, yes, you look like a goddamn whale. Immediately.
Yes.
Or what am I, a goddamn fashion expert? Well, hell yes. But basically, whenever you go so over the top, that's where comedy comes from. Anyway, people like might get a little pissed off at you, but they think it's hilarious that you do such a thing.
Exactly.
And I've had people be really mad at me and still laugh at some of the shit I said to them because it was funny. Go ahead.
How do you manage the fallout of this, because when I think of your work, my first experience of your work, it reminded me a lot of Fritz Perls, and the encounter groups and all of that. And it was just kind of, in a way, whatever the situation, let's blow up the situation now and see where the parts land. And so I think my sense is that some of your work is in that gestalt tradition, and
that's
what
where
happens
I learned all
after
about
that.
Well, what happens is that the things come back together, but they're not being put together by the mind, and that's a big advantage. It's okay that things fall apart. The world falls apart at the seams. Okay, fine. Then it falls back together. How? Well, it falls back together with people talking about, well, what is now going on? What happened? What broke? What's new? What do we not have that we had before? What do we have that we didn't have before? And then you share it, and somebody says, what should we do? And the other person says, I don't know. What do you think? I don't know. What do you think? And that is a great, blessed, sacred space of creativity. When someone says to you, I don't know, let's figure it out if we can. If we can't figure it out, let's just have a beer and daydream about it or something. It's one of the things about so much experience over my whole lifetime, me and all the people I've known with altered states of consciousness, is that we were preparing ourselves for this world of uncertainty that we're now in, because knowledge is escalated so that we're all suffering from an oversupply of information. Everybody is information ruined. That's like everyone is overwhelmed with information, and you can't even keep track of which information is honest information, which isn't. And if you do sort out what's good information, there's too damn much of it to figure it out anyway. And so what skills that allow people to survive well are skills of living into uncertainty and being able to be comfortable with uncertainty. Being comfortable with uncertainty is one of the things that radical honesty teaches you. Because you don't ever know for sure. You might think, oh, if I say that to him or her, they'll be completely mad, they'll leave, they'll never speak to me again. And I always say, okay, try. Because I did come from that bunch of, I was a Gestalt therapist. I was trained by Fritz Perls. I did learn from him, and I was trained by a lot of other Gestalt therapists trained by him. Jim Simpkin and Bob Hall and a whole bunch of people whose names you would know from where you live in California. But basically, that is the tradition I come from. And the tradition has what I call a very, very compassionate perspective called fuck 'em if they can't take a joke.
You know, I would love, you know, I've always had dreams of creating a comedian's coat of arms. And having that phrase in Latin somehow emblazoned on a t-shirt and so on.
Yeah. But
yes, and so there is compassion. There is compassion in there because, again, it's a way of being responsible for what you say, but not necessarily for how either other people are going to react to what you say.
That's right. And if they react and they say, well, I think you're wrong, you say, thank you, because I'm interested in people being wrong. What is it? What's wrong with it? How come? And I'm open to the possibility that I'm wrong. Now, I was interviewed by the Secret Service once when I said some bad things about George W. Bush. They came to interview me to see if I was a threat to the life of the president. And the last question they asked me, and they were going to either take me in or leave, the last question was, if you were in a room with the president, would you do him harm? I said, no. But then as an afterthought, I said, not unless he came after me. Then I'd take pleasure in kicking his goddamn ass. And they looked at each other. You know, which box to check? So they finally said to me, look, we're going to go outside here in the car and talk, and we're either going to come back in and get you, or we're going to drive off. I said, okay. So they went out there for 20 minutes. And they drove off.
they were actually on their way to tell George Bush, if you're ever in a room with Brad Blanton, for goodness sake, don't start anything. they were off to do their job. So in terms of relationships, you know, I mean, we've heard that phrase, living lives of quiet desperation. And uh-huh. In a certain regard, there are certain relationships that are just mutual lies being kept in place. One of my favorite yeah. brilliant observations by Woody Allen. My wife, he comes to a psychiatrist. He says, my wife thinks she's a chicken. And the psychiatrist says, well, how long has this been going on? He says, 25 years. And the psychiatrist says, well, why are you coming to me now? He says, well, until now, we needed the eggs.
Yeah. Right.
So how do people become safe enough? Because, again, I mean, there was a time when I thought, wow, if I really did this, my marriage would just blow up. We wouldn't be able to put it back together again. And since that time, you know, Peter and I have been, you know, in many different practices so that we're able pretty much to speak our hearts, not our minds
yes.
so much, speak our hearts. How does this, I'm sure you've encountered a lot of relationships where there is that interlocking pattern of, you don't call me on my stuff and I won't call you on yours.
I know. I think it's unfortunate that basically my view of relationships, I've said in several books, is that maybe like half of relationships end in divorce, or a little bit more than half. And of those remaining, many more than half of those suck. So I'd say my general guess is that about 12.5% of relationships are successful. And by success, I mean that they do have conflict and they get mad, and then they get over it. They get through it. They resolve it some way, and they put something new together, not by being desperately avoidant of anything falling apart, but by letting it fall apart, being honest and reuniting and being appreciative of the other person for sticking with them through it. And it's a very difficult thing to understand transformation, but the place where it's really tested is in relationships. Now, I became an expert. I am an expert because I've had 5 successful marriages.
That's a good refrain. That's a good refrain. If at first you don't succeed, change your definition of success. I like that.
That's right.
My friend Richard Stockton said that. I'll quote Richard Stockton. But go ahead.
Okay. Well, so I am an expert, and I'm proud of it, because my measure is our kids have all turned out good. They're contributors. They're very successful. My daughter is a really world-famous now singer-songwriter, Carcy Blanton, at carcyblanton.com. I should do a little commercial. And all my kids are very successful. One of my kids works for Lego Corporation in Denmark, and three of the kids were just there going there for Thanksgiving. And basically, my daughter Shanti is at the University of California, Berkeley, out there, right near where you are now. And she's an associate dean of the graduate school. And basically, all of my kids are successful, and they have kids of their own, and they're contributors to society. And where their mothers and I worked through our separation. We got mad, got over it. We got sad, got over it. We still supported each other. We raised the kids. We co-parented. We didn't have lawyers tell us how we're supposed to live our life. We did it by figuring it out with our cohorts and friends who helped us work through things. And so I've had five successful marriages by virtue of the fact that the kids that came out of them were parented and step-parented and co-parented by a wonderful array. My wife that I had two kids with was also the stepmom of two other kids and really important in their lives. And so I'm very grateful to my ex-wives and they to me for the ways we loved our children. And so
what a wonderful way to put it. Go ahead.
And I'm proud of it. It's not just a defensive thing. It's a little funny.
Okay, well, we're going to be back with Brad Blanton with our final segment and talk about radical honesty in politics. Steve Behrman, Wiki Politiki.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network. Presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
Hi, this is New Age Grammy winner Paul Avgerinos. Thanks for listening to Om Times Radio, and please support my peaceful healing music with a purchase at iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you shop for fine music. Just put my name into the search engine, Paul Avgerinos, A, V like Victor, G like George, E-R-I-N-O-S. You can also visit me at roundskymusic.com. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you the brightest of blessings.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Okay, this is Steve Behrman. We're back, WikiPolitiki. We're back talking with Brad Blanton. Brad, you ran for Congress twice. Tell us about that. How'd that come about, and what happened?
Well, I've said often, because I was a therapist in D.C. for 35 years, and I saw more lawyers than any other single profession, and I invented radical honesty out of what they taught me, that the end result of psychotherapy, when it works, is activism. If psychotherapy works, the person who was in therapy becomes an activist. If the person who was in therapy doesn't become an activist, then the therapy was a failure. Because we're living in a morass of my bullshit's better than your bullshit kind of ongoing struggle. And people have to be prepared to defend whatever they have to say and their image and whatever people think of them and stuff like that. And they can't say, I don't know, or maybe I was wrong, or, well, maybe you got a point. Let me hear more. How do you get to say that? You get to say that by not being so attached to being right. And that's a difficult learning. It's difficult to learn how not to be too attached to being right. But the way you get over it is not by acting that you're civil when you're mad. That doesn't work. You go ahead and get mad. No, I'm right. You're wrong. You're stupid. I'm brilliant. I'm a genius. You're a goddamn fool. You start out there. And then you explain to them why, you know, that comedian I really liked, the black comedian who
Richard ran Pryor? Down the street.
Richard Pryor.
Yes.
Had this thing where he would come in and he would say, my wife left me. Okay, bitch, gonna go, let her go. But no, she got to tell me why. And I always loved that. I always thought, you got to tell me why is the short of most conflicts in couples, is that they said something and they just shut up. That'd be all right, but they got to tell you why. And you got to tell them.
Exactly. It's all on the battlefield, you know, and we don't have to be on that battlefield. But the battlefield is a mind versus mind, being right versus being right. So you went and you ran for Congress in your little rural district in Virginia. So how did that tell us a little bit about how that came about and what happened?
It was 10 counties in Virginia. I didn't have a chance. I said so. The one commercial that I had, I said, I know I can't win this race. It's in this district 10. It's like about 10 counties. And I just want to see, give you an opportunity. I'm running as an independent against a powerful Republican who I think is a fool. And I just want to see how many intelligent people there are in this community. And that was the heart of my campaign.
It was a survey.
And I got 25% of the vote, which was like a record for an independent in Virginia.
Exactly.
And I also got Virginia to go. I endorsed the Democrat for the Senate, and I brought in 25,000 votes of the total of the whole state of Virginia. And he won by 18,000. So I changed the majority in the United States Senate by running and failing to win. So I thought that was fine.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's called collateral benefits, like collateral damage, only different. You had collateral benefit.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. So, it was a collateral benefit.
So if you're and I haven't I think I read your Honest to God book, and the one on parenting, I didn't get to that one. But What is it, you know, given our, the new word, I think we've used the word situation, given our situation out there politically right now, how did we get the pathological liar as president?
I don't know, but he does the same thing. He did the same thing you did. You know, he made a comment yesterday on Twitter about Adam Schiff instead of
oh, yeah, I saw that.
He called it Adam Schiff. It's just like saying situation. He's just like you. You realize you're just like Donald.
He's exactly like me. Yeah, but and the thing is, here's what I'm finding as I talk to people who support him. You know, they appreciate his honesty about being outrageously dishonest.
They do. They appreciate the fact that he's outrageous, and I do too. I appreciate that. I would rather have somebody outrageous than somebody that's one of the problems that Hillary had against him is that she's so modestly moderate and careful and predicting, and she picked Tim Kaine, which is a big, big mistake because he's another moderate. And it's like, careful, careful, careful. I play golf all the time, you know, and one of the things we say at the golf course just as a joke with each other is 90% of balls that are left short of the hole don't go in.
yeah, that's right. that's
so
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Carefulness is my enemy. And I get careful whenever I'm trying to make sure I do good. I get careful. And getting careful is not the great idea. And getting not careful on purpose because of a principle of belief, that's not much of an idea. I mean, you always hit the ball too far. You have to be able to get more oriented toward what is there and what's going to happen as best as you can predict. And not worry about whether it's going to be perfect or bad or short or long. You just want to go toward that target, and some of them are going to go in and some of them are not. That's a very difficult attainment in golf. And you can see it by watching pros, too, everybody that plays golf. And the idea is to be not careless and completely off the map and not careful and completely like chicken about everything that you do. But to be able to find in there some way of, okay, here, this is what I think. This is where I'm going. This is what I've done. I've hit the ball. It's gone up there. It went to the hole. It went to the right. It missed the hole. That's what happened. Now, you can cuss if you want. That's fine. It doesn't make any difference. What happened, happened.
Yeah.
And in a way, I recommend being kind of a fatalist. You know, if you're in a relationship, say, well, yes, I know, we're in love now, but generally in about 2 to 2.5 years, love fades. and then you have to figure out a way to either renew it or have troubles from it and then get over the troubles or have troubles and then split up. That's the way the world is.
Well,
so that realism.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, how do you... You know, that's really a powerful navigation. I remember the moment that I realized that Trump was probably going to win was during the debate where he pointed to Hillary and he says, this is how a politician speaks. And pointing out what you just pointed out, that it's almost predictable. It's almost scripted. You know, it's kind of like our thoughts and prayers are with you or whatever people say in those kinds of situations. That has no meaning, whereas if you say something that's it's meaningless. So how
it was
go ahead.
Well, just saying Obama, I was very, very, very disappointed in Obama. I was disappointed him for the same reason, some carefulness. The thing is, he was in there, he could have absolutely raised hell. But he didn't. I'm so sorry that he didn't. I bet he's damn sorry that he didn't either.
He
because
should be.
Raising hell.
Yeah.
I miss him when I see him talking. Oh, my God, he can say two sentences together. Isn't that wonderful? And Michelle Obama, I love her. I think she should have been president in the first damn place. But to stick to my point, the point is that when you have the ability to take a stand for something that you believe in, you don't begin by offering compromise. You begin by saying, I'm right, you're wrong. I'm a good person. You're a bad person. You're full of shit, and I'm brilliant.
That's the bully pulpit with the real bully in it. Yeah, no, yeah.
That's right. He's got the bully pulpit. Be a goddamn bully.
A friend of mine who's who's a big basketball fan said that Obama, the way Obama played basketball, he's a basketball player too, he didn't like being under the basket. He liked doing the three-point shots from way out there because under the basket it's kind of messy and you have to get into these kinds of conflicts where you can't get along with everybody.
Yeah. Yes, I bet that's true. That's exactly the perfect analogy of what I'm trying to say. As I like people, you know, my friends most of my life have been runts. When in the civil rights movement, the people that did things, they went out on the goddamn bridge whether they got the shit beat out of them or not, or got arrested or not. I got arrested only about like 15 times over like 15 years. With the thing is that the people went out there and said, like, I jumped off of a wall and hit five cops once, just flying through there to break into their White House phone. And they threw me down, put my arm behind me, and had me locked up within like 10 seconds of when I hit them. But I knocked five of them down. Really proud. I thought that's a good way to get arrested. I'm interested in people that are venturesome because they are willing to take a stand for what they believe, and they're also willing to engage another person, and they're also willing in that engagement to stick with it and let the possibility of change occur, not by some phony politeness, but by some two people fully advocating what they're advocating and going up against each other. That's what transformation is. From.
Don't we have so many experiences? I have experiences of, people who I didn't like or didn't like me, we're in conflict, we have disagreements, and by fully engaging with those disagreements, we become friends. We become respectful colleagues, and it deepens the relationship when there's a conflict that you're able to move past. In the few minutes we have left, let's talk about your most recent book in child raising. And, you know, obviously you're both competent and fortunate to be able to, you know, raise happy and successful contributors as children. What was how did you apply radical honesty in family work like that with children?
So mostly I was able to learn from them rather than try to teach them something. The main thesis of radical parenting is you think your job now is to teach them what to do. But I'm telling you what your job is, to touch their feet every morning and say, Guru, what should I do today? That you should basically have them remembering, making you remember what you forgot. By growing up, that they are the ones with the more valuable information, and that they are going to be that way at least until they're 11 or 12 years old. When they get abstract cognitive ability, they'll be able to become a bullshit artist like you are.
They'll learn that. There's plenty of opportunity to learn that skill.
That's right. They'll get plenty of chance to learn that in school and everybody they hang out with and stuff like that. But the idea is basically to honor the being of that little being who's full of joyful noticing and noticing joyfulness and whose life is about playing and basically is a whole hell of a lot wiser than you are, because what we do is we get born, and as the years go on, we get stupider and stupider because we have minds, and your mind is not your best friend. So
that's true. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who says, your mind, don't go there alone.
Yeah, right. I have a t-shirt from the No Mind Festival. I've been to 7 years in Sweden, and the No Mind Festival t-shirt I have says, somewhere around here, I lost my mind. If you find it, you can keep it.
Yeah, and that's really good. There's a positive thing to lose your mind and to gain your heart, because really we are living so much by concepts and structures That and I think that all of us who've been since the inception of radical honesty, we've seen the internet, we've seen the even more and more and more information
overload,
and so on. Yeah. Well, I guess we're done. This is the end of our show. Brad Blanton, author of Radical Honesty, thank you so much for a very enjoyable and enlightening conversation. This is Steve Behrman.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
A pleasure to have you. And go to my website, wikipolitiki.com, and you'll be able to find out more about Brad Blanton and how to reach him on the internet. This is Steve Behrman, Wikipolitiki. Thank you so much.